Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs, the funny, the weird, the daft, and the outright baffling tunes that have been skipping and dancing around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered novel, so why not celebrate it? Joining me on this episode for a trip back to the 1980s is journalist Emma Burnell. You can find Emma on Twitter as @EmmaBurnell_. You can also hear Emma on the Zeitgeist Tapes, a monthly podcast that she co-hosts all about the intersections between popular culture and politics. You can look for that at @ZTPodcast on Twitter, or just search for it in your podcast app to find it. If you enjoy this podcast, then the best thing you can do is to leave a rating or review wherever you're listening. And if you feel like being extra nice, please share or retweet the links to the episodes so I can reach more people with the show. If you want to email me, drop a line to headballetpod@gmail.com. And remember that we're also on Instagram as well under the username headballetpod. All of the tunes we're discussing and the relevant videos and the like are posted in playlists on Spotify and YouTube, which we'll link to on the other media. And, you know, we're everywhere. We're all around you. We're protecting you. We're looking after you. We've got a hand on your shoulder. We're mysterious. Enigmatic. Are we even here? So we're recording this in summer, although you wouldn't know that from looking out the window where I am anyway. But your choice for this episode, Emma, has a bit of a touch of Halloween about it. So could you tell everyone what you've brought along for us to chat about today?
So I have brought the absolute classic Camouflage by Stan Ridgway.
From 1986.
1986, yes.
So I'll do the facts and figures up front for this. It's obviously a single because that's how it qualifies for this show. Camouflage by Stan Ridgway, released on IRS, the label I think I know best because it released REM's stuff. It first charted in the UK on the 5th of July 1986 and eventually got up to number 4 in the charts, having a 12-week run on the charts. But yeah, number 4. So it was a pretty big hit for the mid-80s, that one, which makes it even more remarkable that I don't think I'd heard of it until this year. Either that or I heard of it as a child and blocked it out, possibly. I don't know. So I think first and foremost, for anyone who doesn't know this song, could you give us a little overview of the flavour of what this song is actually all about?
So I think what this song was largely about was cashing in on the Vietnam film craze that happened in the mid-80s. I think the 80s, you know, you had a lot of the people who kind of came of age during the Vietnam War in the sort of late 60s, early 70s were now sort of in charge of things in film studios and stuff. So they were now making films like Born on the 4th of July and Platoon and all of those. And, yeah, there was just, Vietnam was just everywhere in the 80s, really weirdly. You're born in the USA, you know, all about the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And I think what Camouflage is kind of going to that sort of bubblier edge of the Vietnam nostalgia and that nostalgia for the camaraderie of, you know, fighting a jungle war, as Stan Ridgway puts it in the song.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's a war that lasted for 20 years in between America and Vietnam. It was a huge, significant event for two or three generations of people. So like you say, it's no surprise that people who've either been through it personally or lived through it politically and seeing it on the news and things would be the people making decisions, writing songs. And there was lots and lots of songs written about the Vietnam War. But I think what's interesting about this is it's not a 60s protest song. This is something totally different. It's a story song.
It's a story song. It's I think, tongue-in-cheek story song, though you may disagree with me. But it's, and most of Stan Ridgway's work is story songs. That's what he, I mean, I saw an interview with him when I was researching for this, and he said, you know, I'm boring. No one wants to talk about me or my love life, so I tell stories in these songs.
Yeah, I can never quite work out from my research is watching, say, the Top of the Pops performance of this or his video for this or looking at some of the other stuff he's done with like his earlier band, how much of it is him being silly and not ironic, but, you know, knowing.
Yeah.
Certainly. I mean, even on his website, which is called stanridgeway.com, strangely enough, his description of himself is a mad scientist of sound and vision. He possesses a style unparalleled, at least in our known universe.
Okay.
I mean, as grand statements go.
I mean, I wouldn't say that camouflage is a sound unlike any other.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a sort of standard-ishy song. It's very, very catchy. I mean, the you know, the chorus, once you've heard it, you're humming it all day, and I have been humming it all day in preparation for this. But, I mean, I think there's definitely moments in this song that would be hard to argue that he's not at least slightly tongue-in-cheek. The moment where, for example, the big marine named Camouflage swaps a bullet with a tree trunk.
Yeah, it's yeah. So why not try and give us an overview of the actual story of the song then? And I don't know whether you want to keep the surprise a surprise or not.
The young narrator of the song. Do you want me to spoil the ending?
Well, we're going to have to at some point, aren't we?
So the young narrator of the song is bogged down by Charlie, which was, as I'm sure your listeners know, the GI, American GI's term for the Vietnamese fighters. And he, you know, he's stuck out for the night. He's not going to get back to his base. He's in danger. He's terrified and he's on his own. And all of a sudden, out of the bushes appears this giant of a man who says his name is Camouflage.
Mm.
And that's what he's known as. And this guy protects him all night. You know, at one point he catches a bullet in his hand, I think, and, you know, he's swatting things with tree trunks. And he protects this young man until daylight comes and Charlie goes away. And he then goes back to his platoon and he goes to the medical tent. And this is the spoiler.
Dun, dun, dun.
There is a Marine dead in the medical tent who died the night before. And that's Camouflage.
He said, "You may be telling true, boy, but this here is Camouflage. And he's been right here since he passed away last night. In fact, he's been here all week long."
A shiver up your spine.
And so the young man gets given his dog tags because he was the last, you know, his ghost was the one who protected him.
So, yeah, that's what we've been trying to get round to. This is a ghost story song. That's which, if you've been listening to this, this is an interesting point. I'm glad we're discussing the single of this, really, which itself runs for nearly 5 minutes. But the version on the album that it comes from runs for over 7 minutes long.
Great. That's a lot of Camouflage.
And if you get to the end of 7 minutes and 17 seconds of a song and it's like, it was all a ghost, I don't know what you're going to feel.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's so obviously supernatural when it's going on. It wasn't that big of a reveal.
Yeah.
I suppose, because, you know, it's quite clearly either a fantasy or a ghost.
Definitely.
That's a weird sentence because I don't believe in ghosts. So I just want to make it clear that I think ghosts are fantasy too. But a very
Yes, that's a good point, actually. Yes, we'll use that against you in some sort of skeptics forum somewhere. Yeah, but can you remember then when you would have first heard this? I mean, I assume at the time.
Well, I'm fairly sure I would have heard it when I was. So I would have been 11 in 86. And I'm fairly sure I did hear it then, but that's not why I know and love it.
Go on then.
So when I was about 14, 15, I started hanging out with a whole new group of friends and we ended up in a band together and all those sorts of things. And as I'm sure you know, at that age, the way that you get to know somebody is by making them a mixtape.
Definitely.
Here is my soul, please love me.
Carefully choosing what you're going to write on the label and how you write it, all that stuff.
And my friend Dan Evans did the best mixtapes. My absolute favourite of his was called Lots of Songs About Motorbikes, in which he only found 3 songs about motorbikes, gave up and just made a really good mixtape.
Excellent.
But on this mixtape that he made were some really cool tracks. and some really wacky sort of novelty stuff, and one of them was Camouflage.
Yeah.
And then, we also, the band had a really weird habit of mishearing lyrics and then writing songs based on what we thought we'd heard.
That's as good a system as any.
So also on this mixtape was The Skin Deep by, I think it was it Depeche Mode?
Oh, I don't know.
For The Skin Deep, which for some reason they thought was Skimney. So they had this whole dance that went with it where you had to skim your knee.
Nice.
But the best mishearing we ever had was Black Flag's TV Party Tonight.
Yeah.
Which for some reason we heard as 16 Pints a Night.
That makes it sound like a half man, half biscuit song.
Well, I'm fairly sure that's why they formed the band, just to write that song.
Excellent.
Dan's mixtapes used to get copied and recopied and copied and recopied, and everyone had a copy of the various Dan Evans's mixtapes. And this was one of our favourites. And, you know, and Camouflage was one of our. And we used to wander around Clissold Park like these 15-year-old lunatics singing Camouflage.
Blimey, that must have been quite the sight.
We were very odd children.
Yeah, it's quite a strange thing, I think, that I really didn't know this. As far as songs about the war of the Vietnam War in the 1980s go, obviously Paul Hardcastle in the year before this came out had a number one with 19, and that must have been there for the same reason that this became a hit, really.
Yeah but a bit more po-faced.
Yeah, a little bit more po-faced, but probably a better song. I don't know. That's arguable anyway. I mean, yeah, clearly you've said that the conflict was sort of still in the air through the popular culture and the films and the like.
I mean, even Status Quo did in the army now around about this time.
Oh, yeah, they would have done, wouldn't they? Yeah.
So, you know, It was quite a sort of popular genre of song.
Yeah. But strangely enough, not popular in America because it wasn't really a hit over there, which is interesting. So it doesn't really seem like he had massive hits in the States himself. Stan Ridgway seemed to be more accepted in, you know, places like Canada, so not that far away, but also in Europe and things like that, which is interesting.
I think possibly that they weren't quite ready for someone being quite so tongue-in-cheek about Vietnam. They were still quite kind of, you know, you were either for it or against it, but you were very, very serious about it.
Yeah, I did find a review of a Stan Ridgway show in England from the Times in 1986, so literally the time that this song was out, which is presumably why he was over here doing these couple of shows for promotional purposes. And he sort of, this person who's writing it, David Sinclair is the journalist who wrote this review. I just want to read this tiny bit. "This is a serious show," Stan Ridgway mockingly vouched. "There are industry people here and I owe a lot of money." Later, he showered the audience with fake paper currency and confetti, yelling too desperately, "Money means nothing to me!" So, sounds like a fun time at Stan Ridgway shows, anyway.
Yeah, if only it was real money. You know, go KLF or go home.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, he certainly made an impact of sorts. If he's, yeah, like I say, the two reviews I found, one was from the Times and one was from the Sunday Times. So it wasn't like I stumbled across stuff in the Mirror or anything like that. It was literally that he's being reviewed in the Times.
High-end, highbrow. But, I mean, maybe that's who he was. You know, avant-garde. He just happened to have this silly little hit.
There's clearly something about him that made him interested to people. And this song is such an odd one. Do you remember the Top of the Pops performance? Have you watched that?
I did watch it. It was the marching at one point, or am I making it up completely in my head? Or is that the video?
That might be the video. I mean, both the video and this are fairly similar, the Top of the Pops performance. So he turns up on the 17th of July at Top of the Pops. And one of my favourite things about Top of the Pops, particularly this era, is what do the set designers come up with for the choice?
Yeah.
And if you give someone a song like this, I love the fact that they've surrounded the stage with essentially razor wire and sandbags.
That's right, I remember now.
But even better than that, they've put a huge mannequin on the stage dressed in combat outfit.
And every time they
reference this big marine, the camera cuts up to, you know, a low angle looking up at this face of this mannequin like you're supposed to.
Oh my God, I completely remember that now. Oh my God, yes.
It's worth watching as well, though, for the sort of tics in the performance that Stan Ridgway does. Like, there's a line in the song about winking, and he does this super exaggerated wink and all this strange stuff, and grabs himself by the arm when the medical officer's doing that as well.
Well, he's much, much more staid than in the video, because it's just kind of him cut with... It's not even cut with kind of war footage. It's just cut with footage from a train, it looks like, going through a jungle. But there's very little...
Yeah.
Kind of like, I mean, you'd think there'd be enough stock footage, the Vietnam War famously being the first television war.
Yeah, it's very much focused on him and the performance of this band that he's got with him. I did look back into his career because he came out of a band called Wall of Voodoo.
Yes.
Which they had a hit with, it was a very minor hit in the UK, but quite big in America, I think, called Mexican Radio. And that was a very weird song. Eating iguanas in Tijuana is one of the rhymes in it.
That's a great rhyme. I'm going to give him that one.
Yeah, well, that's why it was a hit, presumably.
I wish I was in Tijuana, eating barbecued iguana. I take requests on the telephone. I'm on a wavelength far from home.
Now I've seen that, though, to the sound of teddy bears coming down the stairs.
there's a mashup.
Tijuana.
Yeah.
I've just completely derailed you there. I mean, I got the sense from the interview that I watched with him, he doesn't take himself terribly seriously, and he doesn't take the industry terribly seriously.
No.
And that sounds very similar to what you were saying from that interview. I'm not sure the journalist got that necessarily.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like he was just having a rollicking time, not taking anything particularly seriously. He'd randomly been invited to England because he'd had a hit, and why the hell not?
The paycheck was worth it, I'm sure. I did find another quote. So in the Sunday Times article, where they're actually interviewing him, not the review of the show, it's just a separate interview, it ends with him saying, "Most pop music I hear just seems to be vacuous sounds. You get a big drum machine and record it and put a bit of reverb in it, and I'm telling you, there's a certain section of the human species that's just going to jump up and down. They don't really know why." And he's sort of saying that's bad.
It's like, well, figuring rave, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So he clearly feels like an outsider in this world, which is interesting. Do you know? I wonder. I won't quiz you particularly, but I wonder if you know what was in the top 10 when this peaked at number 4. What sort of people were up in that top 10? It's a very interesting top 10, I think.
86, summer 86. I was 11. I was just about to go to secondary school. So Madonna would have been very big then.
Yes, certainly.
So that would have been around the first Madonna, sort of Like a Virgin time?
Not far off.
True Blue-ish? Have we got to True Blue by then? She must have been Papa Don't Preach.
It was Papa Don't Preach, yeah.
Yeah, with my deductive logic.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, that was on its way down from number one, so that had been a number one. Do you know what? I'm going to go from 10 upwards, and you can tell me if you've got any thoughts on any of these songs as well, because it's nice to put things in context.
Absolutely.
So number 10 is Robert Palmer with I Didn't Mean to Turn You On.
And he didn't.
Yeah, fair enough. How about at number 9, did you listen to Every Beat of My Heart by Rod Stewart?
No, I never got the Rod Stewart thing at all. I mean, I can just about stomach Maggie May as a song, but the Rod Stewart thing. Other than, I have to say, my dad is a model railwayer. So,
oh, yeah.
Rod Stewart donating £10,000 to get that model railway back and going, good on you, man.
Yes, indeed. I'm a big fan of the model railway as well. And so that's earned him a lot of kudos.
Making model railway buildings with my dad is something that we can do together without, well, we did it together before lockdown, without railing, which is almost unheard of in our 45 years together on this earth.
Oh, that's nice.
We've now very much enjoyed. We've made a church and a couple of stations. It's lovely.
Oh, that's good. At number 8, anyway, this week was What's the Colour of Money by Hollywood Beyond.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that was a one-hit wonder, wasn't it, roughly?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, that's always a bit of a funny term, but it was a bit odd. Yeah, I did listen to all of these earlier today, and not many of them really leapt out at me, but then I wasn't really focusing on the sort of people in the pages of Smash Hits boy of the age of 8.
Peak Smash Hits reading age.
So you'll definitely have known number 7, which was Find the Time by Five Star.
Oh, Five Star. Not their best hit, admittedly, Find the Time. But yeah, Rain and Shine was a lovely little song.
Yeah, they've got a special place in a lot of people's hearts, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they were a nice little innocuous... You know, they were never. The problem with Five Star is that their record company said, look, it's the British Jacksons, and it just wasn't.
No. It lacks that exotic sort of touch of America, doesn't it, when the videos of them dancing along the Thames embankment. What's above them? Number six is Let's Go All the Way by Sly Fox.
I mean, I know it. It sounds like Roxette in my memory, but...
No, it's not one I'd heard of. Yeah. Number five is a hit by Boris Gardiner called I Want to Wake Up With You.
Oh, I want to wake up. Oh, Boris Gardiner. He was about 70, but he was lovely. He looked like Daley Thompson's dad.
Yeah,
that was a lovely little hit. I think it was a one-hit wonder again. I got the feeling that it was one of those hits where someone who was really well-known within, like, reggae and stuff had a breakthrough chart hit. So he'd already had this huge following. I don't know. I'm making that up in my head, but that was my backstory for him.
I think that's more or less right. So he was just below Camouflage at number four. Number three was Papa Don't Preach by Madonna. Number two was So Macho by Sinita.
Oh, God, yeah. Love that. That was a fairly early Stock Aitken and Waterman, wasn't it?
I'm not sure with that one. Sinita, was that... But was she not an early Simon Cowell?
She was Simon Cowell's girlfriend, but I don't think he was producing by that point. I think he was still running around dressed as a dog.
That's fair enough then. Well, he's irrelevant to this conversation anyway. But number one, everyone's favourite song of all time, The Lady in Red by Christabel.
No! Now, I will tell you a secret.
Go on.
You and your many podcast listeners, so it's not going to be a secret for long. My mum absolutely loved that song, and she loved it so much that she bought Into the Light, the album.
Oh, right.
Playing it in the car. And the truth is, there's actually some really banging tracks on that album that I really quite like.
Oh, right, yeah.
None of them are The Lady in Red, which is just the most dire song ever written.
Yeah, and it sort of only got worse when people found out sort of what it was all about and everything as well as the years went by.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, The Lady in Red should be cancelled.
Yes, definitely. But that's... the context that Camouflage finds itself in, which is quite an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, I mean, it really stands out, doesn't it? Like, within that sort of, I mean, you've got mostly love songs, which is fine, it's a bog standard, really, isn't it? Madonna's Daddy, I'm Knocked Up.
Yeah.
And here's a weird story about a Marine from 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's quite something. Now, I mentioned to you while we were sort of planning to do this that it reminded me of a song from much earlier called Ghost Riders in the Sky. Had you ever heard of that song before?
I must have heard a gazillion versions of that song. Yeah. When you asked me to look it up, I did. And I just, obviously, I know it because who hasn't covered that song?
Yeah, it is very famous in two or three different versions as well.
And it's gorgeous. I mean, all those lovely steel guitars. I mean, that's totally me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's much, much more straight-laced than Camouflage.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's, yeah, it's just told with, you know, some sort of round-the-campfire religious thing.
Which is what I believe was its origin, wasn't it? It was, you know, it was told round a campfire to the person who wrote it by a Native American.
Yes, so this is Stan Jones, who was the originator of this song, which is more famous in pick a version, you know, Johnny Cash, whoever. And it tells this tale of these fearsome herds of cattle going through the sky, warning this cowboy about his lifestyle, passing a message on from the beyond. And it's very, very eerie. But I think it's definitely got some influence on Camouflage in terms of a bit of like the tone of a ghost song.
Yeah, the tone of the ghost song, and I think the twang of the guitar. I think the structure of it definitely speaks to Camouflage, doesn't it?
Ghost riders in the sky. Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, shirts all soaked with sweat.
He would have heard that.
Oh, yeah, I think it definitely, yes, it's. It would have been in his consciousness, I'm sure. And I reckon there's probably a couple of other things it reminds me of. The theme from Rawhide it reminds me of as well.
Yeah.
Camouflage does.
Which, of course, I only ever knew as the song from the Blues Brothers.
Yes, me too as well. It's a film I watched, wore out the VHS of
that. Absolutely, yeah. I think that was our tape number three in our household. 2004 was Star Wars. That's quite the accolade.
So, yeah, I do feel the need to mention, although I feel dirty to say it, but in Blues Brothers 2000, I believe they actually do Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Oh, do they? I've never seen it. I couldn't.
Oh, and they do conjure up Ghost Riders in the Sky to help them escape. Oh, it's dreadful. Oh, it's such an insult to the first film.
And I can literally just, we could spend an hour, just the rest of the podcast, just me quoting various lines from Blues Brothers, and not even the most obvious ones. My favourite line in the Blues Brothers: "Do you have a Miss Piggy?"
Oh right, yeah, in the arcade. Yeah. As the car comes. My favourite one, I use whenever I'm doing a bit of DIY or whatever, is just saying, "This is glue, strong stuff."
Yes.
All the classics that they put on the poster. Apart from that dreadful connection to Blues Brothers 2000, Ghost Riders in the Sky, there's another song called The Ballad of the Green Berets by Barry Sadler, which came out in the 60s.
Oh, that was serious, wasn't it?
Very serious.
Yeah, really patriotic, jingoistic, not my tea.
Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only three win the Green Beret.
It's so straight down the line. This is a Green Beret singing a song about the Green Berets, but it's got the military drum backing, which is also something that creeps in towards the end of Camouflage.
Yeah, right at the very end, they have that kind of rat-tats drum with the kind of hoopla, like a drill sergeant, don't they?
Yeah, and that's what basically Ballad of the Green Berets sounds like all the way through. But like I say, you know, Vietnam, as in terms of its influence, it wasn't just creating protest songs, it was creating, you know, these very patriotic songs.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, it was like very much like the two Americas, and you know, if you think quite a reflection of now, you know, two just completely different cultures, listening to different things, watching different things, not necessarily getting different news sources in those days, but certainly responding to those news sources very differently.
I mean, I do wonder really what with Hardcastle's 19 and Camouflage being such big hits in the UK, whether there was a certain amount of the Falklands conflict still being in the air as well. You know, not just the big revival of Vietnam as a cultural thing rather than as a political thing, but maybe there was a little bit of war has been in the air in recent years as well.
I imagine there was a certain amount of that, but there was also an awful lot of, we just all wanted to be American in the 80s. I mean, even I'm a lefty kid growing up in Stoke Newington, which was a lot less posh then, but I was desperately sure I was going to be American growing up. And, you know, I had this whole idea that, you know, what you look like, because we just completely imbibed, you know, Coca-Cola culture.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, you know, the 80s, really, you lived that. And I think maybe the reason that people like me latched onto the Vietnam stuff more was because it was countercultural America rather than the kind of mainstream America.
Yes, I suppose so. It did touch so many different areas of commentary, especially musically. I mean, the folk and the folk rock movement had a lot to do with commenting on the Vietnam War through its protest songs and the like. One of the earlier episodes of this show was featured Tom Paxton, and he wrote some brilliant songs in sort of protest of the war as well.
I love Tom. I mean, I'm a bit of a folky, so, you know, that sounds right up my alley. I'll have to reach back and listen to that one.
There's one where Tom Paxton's talking about from the point of view of a Marine or someone in Vietnam, and they're sitting down, but they're actually sitting on pot that's growing wild in the jungle, and they're just all getting high as they sit there.
Amazing.
So it's a very interesting perspective on the soldier's life in Vietnam.
Well, I may be crazy, but I think not. I'd swear to God that I smell pot, but who'd have pot in Vietnam? He said, what do you think you've been sitting on? These funny little plants, thousands of them. God Almighty.
I mean, that was one of the things that Vietnam really kicked off. Sort of, you know, it wasn't just the guys at home smoking pot. You know, there's a huge amount of drug use in Vietnam. Did you ever, what was that show that used to be on very late at night? Was it Tour of Duty?
Sounds familiar.
it was on about 1 o'clock in the morning. And for some reason, again, this same gang of weird mates, we used to watch it whilst off our boxes on various substances. I'm going to say beer just to err on the safe side for your podcast, but we'll call it beer.
Yeah.
Why the hell were we 15, 16 years old watching Tour of Duty at 1 a.m? But that's, that it was so everywhere, that Vietnam culture.
Well, let's get back to camouflage for a little bit then, as we sort of round things out. I love the idea that if you had a nickname, it would be camouflage.
Yes, that's like you stand out, really, isn't it?
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, because obviously you want to be hidden in the jungle, but it also suggests you could just get away with it and just get out.
I mean, my guess is it's, again, an ironic name, because if you think about the physical description of the guy, he clearly stands out. Like, he's really tall, he's really big, he's broad. So maybe they call him camouflage because everyone can see him.
Yeah, I think that actually answers that, I think, perfectly.
There you go.
Excellent. I hadn't even twigged with me that one. Well done. That solved the entire problem with the song.
And I knew there was something weird about him, because when I turned around, he was pulling a big palm tree right up out of the ground and swatting those Charlies with it from here to Kingdom Come.
I suppose, actually, I've said we should go back to camouflage, but it's just reminded me of another song in the mysterious things happening. There's a song by Jim Reeves called Old Tige. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one.
Don't know that one. No, yet.
Well, that's another story of a man who's been away to war, and he comes home and his mum says, and he says, oh, it was so nice that Old Tige greeted me off the bus after 3 years away, and his Old Tige's his dog. and his mum says, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but Tige died after you left. He was brokenhearted. And that's the song. It's one of the most depressing things I've ever heard.
Why have you told me this?
Blame Jim Reeves.
I do.
I hate to tell you, son, she said, but now you've got to know. When you left, it broke his heart. Tige died 3 years ago.
Yeah, because it's, and if you know, like, Jim Reeves' sort of country style voice, but he just does it like he's reading a letter. It's a very odd thing, but it's essentially the same thing, but with a dog instead of a giant marine.
But he does get his dog tags, so,
Yeah, there we go, another link. You're pulling all the pieces together here. This is your ability as a journalist to analyse the information and make connections.
When you get to 800 words and you've got to get that final sentence, it's like, and the dog tags.
Yeah. I went through the lyrics and I highlighted a few things in camouflage. One of the ones you've mentioned was this bit where he's pulling up palm trees and he's just smashing, like a cartoon, smashing people out of the way. And also just the phrase, this was an awfully big marine.
That's my favourite bit. Every time I sing that, makes me smile. This comes on my, because it's on my kind of, every song I like playlist. And it pops up more than you'd think, given there's about 600 songs on my every song I like playlist.
Well, it's on the subject of like closing paragraphs for things. The sort of the last verse of this before the final repeated chorus comes in opens with I think this is probably my favourite line in it is, so next time you're in a jungle fight. I'll bear that in mind.
Thanks. It's 86. We're never going to war in Vietnam again after what happened last time.
I used to play down the valley in North Yorkshire. There was quite a lot of trees about, but I never considered it akin to digging in the jungles of Vietnam.
Yeah, no, I've been to, I don't know which part of North Yorkshire you're from, but there was a few trees in Saltburn when I went there, but it didn't feel very much like Vietnam.
No, I was just outside Scarborough, so not a million miles away from there. But yeah. But I will bear in mind, though, as the song tells me, so next time you're in a jungle fight, that's your Ray Mears way out is to conjure up a ghost.
that's the thing. Like, this is not helpful advice, Stan. Next time you're in a jungle fight, what? Oh, find a ghost.
Yeah. So let's start to sum up a little bit here. Tell me then, what does this song mean to you?
I mean, for me, it means running around with those lunatics that I was friends with, and I'm still friends with most of them now, when I was 15, and just, you know, having the time of our lives, discovering each other through making each other laugh. And yeah, just I really like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love serious music, I love deep music, I love music that makes me cry, but I love music that makes me laugh too. And I just think there isn't enough respect sometimes for just a really good, tongue-in-cheek, fun song.
Oh, well, amen to that. That's part of our philosophy here.
Absolutely.
I have got a question to ask you to round this off then. And this is because on your website, in your description of yourself, you claim that you are a karaoke diva. Have you ever done Camouflage on karaoke?
No, it's not nearly stretching enough. I obviously have to do all the ones where I get to warble like a Mariah Carey or something.
Well, I don't know. Perhaps you need to bring that to the table, to the Stan Ridgeway table, next time you have the chance.
But My Heart and Soul by T'Pau is unbeatable.
All right. Excellent stuff. Well, once we're out of this dreadful lockdown and all the many karaoke bars have flung their doors open, I expect a report of you at some point, at least trying Camouflage.
It is a promise, and I'm not a politician, so I'll keep it.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, Emma.
Thank you. Whoa!